Okay, we start. We are on chapter 5 of the second series of Essays on the Gita. So that means if you take from beginning, it will be the 29th chapter from Essays on the Gita. And this is a continuation of chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita. So in chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita, it's termed as Raj Vidya Guhya Yoga. So there is a secret, Guhya secret, and Raj Vidya, the king's secret, whose knowledge is not accessible to all creatures. And at the very beginning, we are told that there are those who with faith know me, and there are those who don't know me and despise me in the human body. So the Gita draws a distinction that there are those who intuitively, it's an act of faith, they know, somehow they know that there is the divine behind this creation within. There is a logic to it, but we need not go into that. And there are those with an asuric predisposition, they don't know me. And the two paths later on he will describe to us. But right now, in fifth chapter, Sri Aurobindo is only laying the foundation of what is this secret or secret of secrets we are here to learn. So it's titled The Divine Truth and the Way. So truth, we all know, is one. We keep hearing this from everywhere. So often when people say that there is one truth, I say yes, but the wise call by different names and the fools conceive it in different ways as if they are mutually exclusive to each other. But in the vision of truth, they are all integrated beautifully, not by some formula, but by the fact of spiritual experience. So this is another thing which the Gita, Sri Aurobindo make it very, very clear that it is known by the fact of spiritual experience. We cannot know these things simply by logical analysis. We can know it by faith and we can know it by spiritual experience, not just as a belief. And yet, Sri Aurobindo explains to us now, and I think this is not very audible, so let me put it here. Yeah, now it's better? Audible? Am I audible, tangible, perceptible, receivable? So the divine truth is being revealed to us, the truth of the divine, and how he is there and is not, is in the cosmos but not in the cosmos, is in every creature but not in any of them. This is the paradoxical terms that the Gita itself says. If you read chapter 9, and that's why it's called as secret of secrets. So you'll see Sri Krishna speaking in terms that are paradoxical. And Sri Aurobindo makes it very simple and clear for us. And to me, it all comes as an image. So I can share the image. And with that image, it becomes very easy to understand what is following. So the image is, let's say, of an author writing a book. So he writes a book, and then he writes another book, then he writes a third book and fourth book. So can we say of the author that he is contained in the book? The answer will be yes and no. In a sense, he is there in the book. Where else the book has come from? But in a sense, he is not there in the book. He exists. Even if there was no book ever written, he would still be there. So there is this status of the divine which transcends his creation. So this is the first truth we have to understand, that he transcends his creation. Then there is the second aspect of the divine where he creates this book. Now this book comes in a certain space-time context, say the Mahabharata. So there is the divine existing beyond the space-time where he carries all of it in himself as a kind of seed or just as a possibility. We can't even use the word seed. Because before the author has started writing, even before the urge to write has come, of course it is there inside, but in some state we don't know. Otherwise, it won't come out. Then the urge to write, and then he picks up the pen. There is the power to write. There is the power to express all that is in his heart. And that power is called as Yoga Maya. It is the divine's power of bringing out in forms and names what transcends forms and name. And it's very real. It's not Maya in the sense it's unreal. It's very real. So when we watch, for example, a television serial on Mahabharata, we hardly think of Vyas. Most people are glued to the scene that is going on. But they are all characters which are emerging from the being of Vyas. So the second is his cosmic manifestation, where he pervades everything. Though it's very difficult to connect with each thing with the author, but he pervades everything that is there, just as the sky pervades this whole phenomena of earth and all that is happening upon it. And just as the air that connects the sky to the earth, similarly, the Yoga Maya or the power of the divine, it connects everything from the divine who transcends all and is it inhibits everything. Air is the very breath of life. It makes us live. It permeates as the aerial principle even in atoms. But where does it rest? It rests in the sky. That's how the whole conception goes. So this is the second aspect, the cosmic manifestation. And then what about each of the character? Each of the character also is something of Vyas is flown into each of the character. It's just like emerged from him and gone into. Because by his breath they live. They all exist because of him. They all exist by him. Were he to withdraw his consciousness from any of them, they would collapse. He can rewrite the whole story. Now here he is not talking of the purpose of the story, because that's not the Gita's intent to unfold. Though it unfolds that at one point of time, talks about march of civilization, all that is there. But right now it's only revealing that look, this entire cosmic manifestation exists in me and by me and for me. That's all. That's what he says. This me is evidently not the egoistic I, because human beings, when they read, especially in adolescence, when you read it, say, oh, Sri Krishna is speaking all about himself. That's not fair. That sounds like anyone else. But this is where we mistake. For the convenience of language, we use the word I. When Sri Aurobindo uses the word I, and when the mother uses the word I, it means very different thing than when someone else. And even in our human life, we all use the word I. But what is that I recognize myself as my fundamental truth? Even at the ego's level, we are using the same word because language, limitation of language. So I had the, you know, I went to the samadhi and I came out of the samadhi. Another I went to the samadhi and came out of the samadhi says the same sentence. But the experience of the two I is very different. So ultimately, what Sri Krishna is speaking of, that I or the great I or me, if you want to put it in capital letters, basically it is about the superconscious state of the Purushottama in which he enters. Sri Aurobindo says that very clearly, and there are indications in the Gita that during the Gita, when Gita was being given, Sri Krishna was in a superconscious state of existence. In that state he entered, because there is an exigency of the moment. He has to express certain things. He even expresses Vishwarupa. But later on he withdraws. It's not like all the time he is acting in that state. So, but any time he can bring out, which opens door to a third possibility. He is not just in the cosmic manifestation, all these characters. He even enters into the cosmic manifestation. So each character is something brought out by him, but he is also in it. But the difference is that these characters, say Mahabharata, the characters Duryodhan, Arjun, many others, they don't know what's going to happen. But the divine entering into the flux and flow of creation is aware, because he is like the leader of the march of civilization. So we have the Mahabharata. Krishna is also a character. Even Vyasa is a character in the Mahabharata. So it's very symbolically accurate description of how the divine flows into the creation, though he is also above it, though he is also covering the whole manifestation, holding it within him, and yet though he is in everything, he is not in anything. He is in everything as the author is in every character. How? Through his power that has gone into creating things. But equally, we cannot say, oh, that means Duryodhan is also Krishna, they are all same. This is the mistake that our mind makes. All is one, all is same, all is equal. It is the truth of our fundamental being, not the truth of the manifestation. So Sri Krishna makes this distinction. And then each of the character also is something of him that has gone into it. And this something of him, the images are much later. So essentially it is some aspect of the divine, of that glory of glories which has flows into each of the character, gets distorted in the lower nature, but eventually it has to recover its fullness through the passage of many lives. That's being not revealed here, but over a period of time it's hinted even in the Gita. So this is the secret of secrets. So what manifest, let us say, in a being like Ravan, in Duryodhan. Duryodhan, because since we are at Mahabharata. So what divine aspect is manifesting in Duryodhan? So as his name suggests, he is a great warrior. That's how he is Duryodhan. Difficult to conquer. It's not easy to beat him. Actually, in many ways, he is quite a match to Bhimsen, who is the unequaled, you know, mace wielder. But of course, he has been later blessed by his mother and he becomes almost invincible. But otherwise, he's a very strong. He will not easily give up. So there are aspects in everyone which are divine, but in a very seed state. They have been conceived by the divine. But as they enter into the lower nature, which Sri Krishna has already revealed, that there is my higher nature and there is the lower nature. In the vibhutis, the higher nature becomes more and more evident. But in the lower manifestation here, they are not manifest. So, or they get distorted. And how to touch this higher nature, divine nature in us, that key has been given to us, that is swabhava. So if we act according to the swabhava, and we are not afraid of the cycles, we are not wanting to run away and escape into nirvana, then we will be participating in the great consummation, the divine becoming that is happening in creation. But if we run away from this creation, I mean, everybody has the freedom, though it's not so easy because there is a reason why creation has come into existence, then we create a gap in the entire structure. And in a way, it does create an imbalance in the creation. So all those who run away, so the advice of Sri Krishna is carry on in the creation, act according to Swabhav, giving everything to me because I am the source of all things, I am the great culmination of all things. And therefore, not only you will progress, but you will help in the march of mankind. This is exactly what he says, why I am working, I continue to work ceaselessly day and night, Sri Krishna says, because if I were to drop away, saying that I don't need anything, then the creation will collapse. So each soul which is trying to escape is in a way increasing the burden of the exchequer on all others who are here. So this is the problem of the nirvanic path, not that people are free to do as they like, and probably some do reach nirvana, but it's not easy. It sounds attractive because the yoga maya has built it in such a way, and one can only, that's why it is said, only by the grace of the Lord you can escape, because he has to sanction. Yoga maya will not let you free. It is the grace of the Lord who can set you free. But then Sri Krishna gives an alternative in the Gita. You can be free, You can be fully within me and yet you can continue to act. This is the whole purpose of the Gita. That you don't have to run away, you don't have to cut the cycle of birth and death out of fear. You should be great souled. That is the word that the Gita uses. Great souled. So there are two kinds of being, great souled and weak souled. So great souled throw themselves in the cycle of creation, go with it consciously. They turn to the divine. They act according to the Sabhava and adore the divine, offer their works to him as sacrifice. They are not afraid of death, they are not afraid of birth, they are not afraid of life, because they know all becoming is ultimately the being extending himself into this creation. So this is the logic. Now the pure Advaitin will say, now we can take several stances in with regard to this divine truth. Somebody who sees only the author, he says, all this has no meaning, I want to meet the author. So author is distinct from the book. You can say that. You're right. But the book doesn't exist independent of the author. This is the distinction which one has to make. So either we have to say that author was a fool that he wrote the book, or somehow the book came into existence, author has nothing to do with it. Or else we have to accept that yes, the author is beyond the book, but the author expresses himself through the book. And both stances have their own validity. In fact, the author extending into the book, though beyond, is a more complete truth. So that's what the Gita is here to teach us. Samagram Mam. And the second is Vasudevam Sarvamiti. So with this background, we'll just read a few passages. The divine truth and way. Shubhendu's even titles are so interesting. It's on page 311. He's not saying the truth and the way. Because he has explained to us, truth is beyond the immutable Brahman, beyond the mutable and the immutable as the Purushottama, so the divine truth. Now this is important, because only if there is a being of the divine, that adoration, sacrifice, all these things have a meaning. So at least I used to have this personal problem, if I may say so. Every time I read the Upanishads, all of them during my college days, and I used to say, I can't love this God. So what do I do with my emotions? I can't love Brahman, impersonal, all this beyond, he has nothing to do with the world. That doesn't engage my being fully. It can engage my mind. Maybe in meditation I may try to come in touch with that, but it doesn't interest my heart. It doesn't engage my life. So what's the point of this kind of a reality which is disconnected from the world? It is true, just as the author also exists independent of the book. But at the same time, it's not complete. It doesn't give us sense of this creation where I exist. But if we take it that the divine is supra-cosmic transcendent, if we take it that the cosmos is his manifestation, and if we take it that each individual, something of him dwells in the individual, then it gives me a basis for my relationships with this world of creatures and with the divine himself. So this used to be at least my personal problem, intellectual problem as a 17, 18 year old, that this is too much. You know, I understand Brahman is there, but what? How do I connect with people in the world? I become nirmohi, I become indifferent, I don't care. Line between, you know, insensitive indifference and the nirvanic peace can be very thin. And it's easy for one to get deluded into the other. Look at Sri Aurobindo, full of compassion, role of humanity. But the whole truth, this is the difference. So the divine truth and the way in the very first passage is very powerful. So he speaks of the integral secret and the seeker of perfection. So perfection is slight difference from liberation. Liberation is important. First, we have to understand that there is a greater truth. But perfection is the fullness of our being, and that fullness exists in the divine. So we can connect with the divine in all his fullness and yet continue to act here. This supreme secret is the mystery of the transcendent Godhead, who is all and everywhere, yet so much greater and other than the universe and all its forms, that nothing here contains him. See, the paradox starts. So he is all of this, and yet he is beyond all this. Nothing expresses him really, and no language which is borrowed from the appearances of things in space and time and their relations can suggest the truth of his unimaginable being. Just as by counting all the characters in the Mahabharata and taking stock of their psychological state, their inner state, we cannot conceive Vyas. We cannot conceive the author. So this is how we have to understand this. The consequent law for perfection is an adoration by our whole nature and its self-surrender to its divine source and possessor. Our one ultimate way is the turning of our entire existence in the world, and not merely of this or that in it, into a single movement toward the eternal. Because everything here derives from the divine truth. See, this is the main difference that he draws between those who have faith and those who don't have faith. So, say, an Arjun is acting or Bhim is acting. He has to remember that the strength that is there in me has come from the divine. Duryodhan is also strong, but he forgets that I owe all this to the divine. Still, ultimately, his will be fulfilled through the clash and the strife. But as far as an individual destiny is concerned, its own consummation, it will be delayed. That's how it is. By the power and mystery of a divine yoga, we have come out of his inexpressible secrecies into this bounded nature of phenomenal things. By reverse movement of the same yoga, we must transcend the limits of phenomenal nature and recover the greater consciousness by which we can live in the divine and the eternal. So this is a very interesting real life story of this. Real life story means of one of the characters who had played the role of Krishna in a serial. Sarvadaman Bhattacharya. He had played the role of Krishna in a serial. Why did he play the role? Because, well, somebody paid him money and he said, okay, fine, I'll play the role. He played it well. After that he said, I just couldn't take up any role. He got fascinated by the whole character. Who is Krishna? Up till then he has not really explored. Same thing happened with Arun Govil, who played Ram. He just couldn't accept any other role. So initially our entry may be through any door, but slowly his being grows upon us, we get fascinated, attracted, and this character becomes one with that original character of whom this is a replica. So this is the example of, and wherever they went, people used to adore them and touch their feet and all kinds of things. The supreme being of the divine is beyond manifestation. The true sempiternal image of him is not revealed in matter, nor is it seized by life, nor is it cognizable by mind. Achintya roop, avyakta murti. What we see is only a self-created form, rupa, not the eternal form of the divinity, swarupa. There is someone or there is something that is other than the universe, inexpressible, unimaginable and ineffably infinite Godhead beyond anything that our largest or subtlest conceptions of infinity can shadow. So this is the origin of certain philosophies that have discarded the entire creation, entire manifestation, all the gods, all the individuals, as if they are invalid. So now there is a partial truth that yes, there is the transcendent who is beyond everything. And to start with, we have to seek him, because that is the highest truth from which all has emerged. But the whole problem is, after seeking him or finding him, do we entirely rubbish this cosmos and creation, leaving a big gap in our understanding, or participate in it consciously? This is the main difference. So on page 312, almost in the middle, he is not in them. It is not in them or by them that he lives, moves or has his being. God is not the becoming. He is describing the transcendent. So that aspect which goes beyond. It is they that are in him. It is they that live and move in him. and draw their truth from him, they are his becomings, he is their being. So this is the first fundamental truth that we have to realize. In the next paragraph, and even to say of him that all exist in him is not the whole truth of the matter, not the entirely real relation, for it is to speak of him with the idea of space, and the divine is spaceless and timeless. Space and time, immanence and pervasion and exceeding, are all of them terms and images of his consciousness. So here again it is like, before even these characters have taken shape or form, they exist in him as some fundamental truth. And then slowly they take the form as an idea, then an image, and then the expression. The characters are developed by the power, the yog maya or the divine power, which is secret in everything. So we have this interesting anecdote of the mother about the war. She was saying, say something about the war. I said, I can't talk about the war. But something comes about the war. So when mother was asked, see, about Pakistan, she said several things. One of them she said, which now we are discovering. She said that, well, all these organizations, United Nations and the United States, they are being moved by the adverse forces. She told that. And they must be converted for the good of the world. Very clearly she said, they are being moved by adverse forces. And the reason she said is they are supporting Pakistan. This was the word. And she said, Pakistan will split into different parts. And she says it won't happen through a battle between India and Pakistan. They will split, they will demand independence and join with India. This is what the scenario is. Now this is one truth in the cosmic manifestation. But at another point, it's very interesting, when the mother was asked by Surendranath Johorji, Taradi's father, that, mother, what about Pakistan? What about Pakistan? And she became quiet, indrawn. Then she says, but where is Pakistan? Where is Pakistan? There is no Pakistan. Now you see, that is a there is a beyond where it doesn't exist. It's a distortion. There is no Pakistan. The truth in the truth of the eternity, there is only the soul, the Indian soul, and all other nations, each has their nation soul. But in the manifestation, it has come. Yog maya or power, creating things, and then the lower nature, the ego, ambition of the politicians, having their way and creating. But since it is not supported by the deepest truth, it is bound to go away. That, as simple as that. How much ever time it may take, whatever be the process, but it's going to go away. So this is how we have to understand that in space and time, the manifestation happens, it happens in a different way. They exist ultimately, but they exist in him in a different way. Just like asuras here. In the divine being, they are not... The asura also finds its origin in the divine. But in the divine being, he represents the force aspect of the supreme. But here, force dissociated from knowledge becomes what it becomes. So this is the... Next page, 313. This is the mystery of his being, that he is supracosmic, yet not in any exclusive sense extra-cosmic. Extra-cosmic means there is no connection with this creation. So there are religions which have made him extra-cosmic. So extra-cosmic means he is nothing. You have to just connect. All this is illusion. Somehow it has come into existence. So he is supra-cosmic. He exists by himself, in himself. But at the same time, he is connected to the cosmos and with each individual. And therefore, we can only say he is supra-cosmic, not in any exclusive sense extra-cosmic, for he pervades it all as itself. There is a luminous, uninvolved presence of the self-being of God, Mama Atma, which is in constant relation with the becoming and brings all its existences into manifestation by his simple presence. Therefore, it is that we have to these terms of being and becoming, existence in itself, Atman, and existences dependent upon it, Bhutani, Sarva Bhutani. So Bhutani is all the elements which have emerged. So their truth is all in the Atman. But each of them has its own reality because they have emerged from the Atman. So that's how Sri Aurobindo says that this world, even if it is a dream, it is a dream fact vision of truth. It is a dream seen by truth. So we can't just discard it. It seems a dream if you go into the supracosmic transcendent. It appears like a dream. But nevertheless, this dream has its own truth and we can't just discard it. So, page 313, next passage, somewhere in the middle. We have to start with the crude experience first of a divine who is something quite different from and greater than ourselves, quite different from and greater than the universe in which we live. And so it is, and no more, so long as we live only in our phenomenal selves and see around us only the phenomenal face of the world. So, the crude, he is using the word crude. Crude is that we are cut off and is beyond all this. And if we live only in the phenomenal selves, then it will be the truth by which, because nothing here expresses that. So we have to get rid of all this and first go and contact him. So this is the crude first experience. That's how we see in the Ken Upanishad. Yan man sana manute yenahur manomatang. Tadev Brahman tvam viddhi nedam yadidam upasate. Know that as the Brahman and not this which men worship here. So, but it creates, as we know, a gap. And the last three lines on this page. When we dwell in this difference only, we regard the divine as if extra cosmic. That means as if he has no connection. Next page. We realize this first truth of the Godhead spiritually, when we get the experience that we live and move and have our being in him alone, that however different from him we may be, we depend on him for our existence, and the universe itself is only a phenomena and movement in the spirit. So again, the thing is, if he may be extra cosmic, but we depend on him, I mean the whole existence depends on him, and this we can even logically understand. Then we can, he stresses this point again and again. So page 315. Again, if we press yet another way the difference between these self and the forms of self, we may come to regard these self as containing and immanent. We may admit the truth of omnipresent spirit, and yet the forms of spirit, the molds of its presence, may affect us not only as something other than it, not only as transient, but as unreal images. So we'll see people, when mother's chair is put, they will say, oh, that's a chair. There's somebody who, I remember, Chotnaranji, once he told, claims to be a yogi, but this term, very crude beginnings. He said, I don't go to Pondicherry, I don't need to go, because there it's just a tomb. Some people use like that, a tomb. And Madhuri Shurbinda inside have realized it. So, Chotnaranji, that is very intuitive and, you know, a kind of sharp, ironical humor. He was very erudite also, had his own experiences. So, he tells him, oh, you mean to say we are fools that last 40 years we are putting our head on the slab of stone? See, so the difference is that, okay, maybe, but that is only his body, and the spirit is different. So they don't understand, for example, the importance of relics. You start with that. It's easy to understand. So what are relics of Sri Aurobindo and the mother? Are they just a part of the body, or are they which carry something of him in it? Now, relics is an example which we can. So, similarly, in a way, this is very special because it belongs to the divine who has taken a human form. But same way, this whole creation, everything contains, even in its outer appearance, even in the form. So he is saying that yes, there is at one level a distinction between the spirit and the form, but at another level it is true that these forms derive themselves from the spirit. The spirit not only pervades, it has entered into it. It's like something of me has entered into the last touching point of the finger and the limbs. I can't just say it is not me. So somebody will say, okay, Give me. It's not you. Give this finger to me. So this is how one has to understand that, you know, there is a very interesting poem of Sri Aurobindo, Form. O worshipper of the formless, reject not form. What dwells in form is he. And then he even goes on to say, this form itself is also he. Now this where both are true, that the spirit exceeds the form. No form can capture him, but this form is also he. Now this is actually a practical implication more than anything else. So practical implication is, because he not only dwells in each form, but he has become these forms, being is becoming. So therefore, through any form, we can enter into his being. So this is one extension. We can pick up a form, and through that form, we can enter into his being. Now that's where the faith is required and the adoration. This he continues to spread. But on the other hand, a few lines below, we get another revealing spiritual experience in which we are forced to see as the very divine all things, not only that spirit which dwells immutable in the universe and its countless creatures, but all this inward and outward becoming. All is then to us a divine reality manifesting himself in us and in the cosmos. See, that is Sri Aurobindo's experience in Alipur jail. He started with this grand experience. He did not see just that the divine is in the tree, but he looked at the tree and saw it as Vasudeva. He looked at the bars in the prison and saw them as Vasudeva. He looked at the little bowl and saw it as Vasudeva. He looked at the judge and saw it as Vasudeva. Not Vasudeva is in them. So this is the subtle difference. But one is to start with beyond. Because first we have to contact that. Then we have to see this whole cosmos. Then each creature as the spirit pervading the form. And then the form itself becoming is something of him. So whole creation, that's why Sri Krishna speaks of the Ashwath tree. Its roots are above. From there it extends below. So don't cut it. There is a truth that divine is beyond this creation. But it is also true that he extends into the creation, not only as the spirit, but has become these forms through his yoga maya. So this is where he is leading us. All is then to us a divine reality manifesting himself in us and in the cosmos. Okay. So, page 316. This is what is intended by the phrase Vasudevaha Sarvamiti. This was his experience in Alipur jail. The Godhead is all that is universe and all that is in the universe and all that is more than the universe. The Gita lays stress first on his supracosmic existence, for otherwise the mind would miss its highest goal and remain turned toward the cosmic only, or else attached to some partial experience of the divine in the cosmos. That means through the gods. So gods belong to the cosmic manifestation. One may remain attached to one of them. But he is beyond. It lays stress next on his universal existence, in which all moves and acts. For that is the justification of the cosmic effort. Otherwise there will be no meaning, no sense. It will all be a meaningless tale. And that is the vast spiritual self-awareness in which the Godhead, self-seen as the time spirit, does his universal works. Next, it insists with a certain austere emphasis on the acceptance of the Godhead as the divine inhabitant in the human body. So now comes that Manushi Tanu Ashritam, where he says, I am in all. Now see, he is speaking paradox. I am not in them. But again he is saying that I am in the human creature. So that's why he uses the word austere emphasis. It's not just in general. So austere here is that, well, he is emphasizing. He is in all things at some point. He says, in fact, I am not in all things. And then he says, everything is in me, yet nothing. And then he says that I am in the human body. Manusi Tanu Ashritam. This is something which the Gita emphasizes a lot. For that seeing too is essential to the God knowledge. On it is founded the integral turn of the whole being and the whole nature, Godwards. The acceptance by man of the works of the divine power in the world and the possibility of remolding his mentality and will into the type of the God action, transcendent in initiation, cosmic in motive, transmitted through the individual, the jiva. So this is how the whole thing is complete, that he is transcendent, he is cosmic, he is immanent. And because he is immanent within man, that means each of us as an individual have a divine meaning. Otherwise, it will be meaningless. If our whole, there is no divine in the individual and he is just cosmic or extra cosmic, then our life has no meaning at all. It will have a very secondary meaning. Cosmos is unfolding, we are just puppets. That's how some people say we are puppets. But we, each of us has a meaning because the divine, a thought of God is in each one of us. That's how Mother puts it. I love this phrase. A thought of God in each one of us. Shobindo uses the word real idea. So, but we have to start from there and then we will enter into the how he is expressing himself in me. What is it purpose he wants to fulfill in me? So there is something called as an individual purpose. It is so because the divine inhabits this, but this individual purpose is connected with the cosmic movement, not independent of it, and the cosmic movement itself depends on the transcendent. So this completes the cycle. So again, there is this thing which we often, because the divine is the Lord, that's what we hear everywhere. He is the transcendent, he is the supreme, he is the Lord. So we have this idea of omnipotence of the Lord. He is omnipotent. So then I should pray and immediately get cured. This is now a big practical difficulty, no? That why doesn't it happen? So there if we understand that how is the cosmos come into existence? Through yoga maya. And then there is the nature. Nature is, let's say, manager of the yoga maya. I didn't want to use the word servitude to yoga maya because she is so living and real to me. Both of them, they will feel bad, huh? That you call me. But through the nature. Now all this is he himself. So it's a whole net he has, that yoga maya has created for the working and functioning of the creation, and you can't touch one point without disturbing all the others. So it's not as, because there are laws that have come into existence with a certain purpose. Let's say, for example, if there is an illness, it's because there is a disharmony. So if I want that it should be fine, like magic, well, if I don't correct the disharmony, it won't work like magic. It may be fine, but it'll come back again. If at all the magic takes place. Because these laws and processes of nature draw themselves from the yoga maya. Yoga maya itself rests on the divine. So it's like he is contradicting himself. That won't happen. So he respects, in common parlance said, he has made the laws and he respects the laws. Though he overrides the laws, he is the Lord and yet he follows the law. So one simple example was that when the car came to pick me up, he parked in front of Desiree, main gate. So I told the watchman, I said, yeah, you're not supposed to. So his logic was that he has come to pick you up. I said, that doesn't matter. Now, that doesn't matter because I have seen the car getting parked in front of the gate, not only here, dispensary, nursing home, and I keep telling them, don't do this. This is not our good practice. Even if a VVIP is coming, don't do this. Don't block a door because, you know, it should be free movement. Just park a little friend. What is there? The VIP can walk 4 steps. What is the problem? So even though this rule, I'm giving a human example. I'm the one who has sort of told them, keep insisting on them. Now, when it's for me, can I break the rule? I won't break the rule. Because it's not a question of my breaking the rule. It sets a different precedence altogether. It disturbs the arrangement of things which have a certain purpose. So that is how, though the divine can do it, he won't do it unless it's really necessary. That why does it still, well, if supposing there is a very serious patient coming who can immediately needs, yes, the rule can be broken. So that's where we have to understand that he works through certain cosmic rules, cosmic laws, and that's why there are three levels at which it operates as far as the workings of nature go. One is the law of karma, which we'll not talk here, that comes much later in the Gita. Second is the cosmic law. There is a universal compassion which acts through the net of the law. And the third is the divine grace. So divine grace can completely change all this. So though he is the Lord, and it's true because ultimately everything comes from him. So there can be no other Lord. But our understanding of the Lord is that arbitrarily he should keep acting according to my whims and fancies. Whenever I tell him, do this, he must do this. If he doesn't do it, then where is he the Lord? No. Lord is Lord. He will act according to his will, not according to my will. So this is what he describes. But the truth, page 317, third line from above. But the truths that we can put forward, okay, we can start from page 316 where the paragraph begins. The Supreme Godhead, the self immutable behind the cosmic consciousness, the individual divinity in the human being, and the divine secretly conscious or partially manifested in cosmic nature and all her works and creatures are then one reality, one Godhead. But the truths that we can put forward the most confidently of one are reversed, or they alter their sense when we try to apply them to the other poises of the one being. As transcendent, he can undo the whole cosmos. But when he is entered into the individual play, he won't do that. So all these are one reality. And he continues to be the Lord, yet the action will be different. Thus the divine is always the Lord, Ishvara. But we cannot therefore crudely apply the idea of his essential lordship and mastery in exactly the same way without change in all four fields. Realize the divine within and see the Lord's action will be so. That's how Mother says, if you can completely surrender, then it's something else which operates. There's a story of one Sadashiv, he worked in marbling, my first department. So there I had the story. And so he developed back pain and severe back pain. And the doctors told him that you have tuberculosis and it needs to be operated and all that. So he wrote to the mother. Mother said, do as you wish to. She said, you go either ways. I am with your choice. So then after 2 weeks, there was a foreign doctor who came from UK. He said, okay, let me take a second opinion. So he took a second opinion. And this doctor also said that, well, now he absolutely right. This needs to be operated. And it's urgent. The sooner you get it done, the better it is. Again, he wrote to the mother. Mother's answer is the same. Do as you wish. Or do as you please. He said, I don't know what to do. So he said, Mother, I don't know what to do. You decide what I should do. The moment he says that, Mother's reply comes. That you must know that ultimately it is only faith and complete surrender that can cure you. Now this came straight from the mother. No via media. He said, okay, I'll do this. So he was 45 when he started. He developed this tuberculosis of the back and all that. And slowly everything went away. And he lived till 85. This never troubled him again. Now this required, see, the whole thing, it changes. He changed the field completely. So that means you have to discover this inner Godhead. It's not magic which just works randomly. It's like if Markandeya has to get rid of this destiny that in 12 years he's going to die. He must discover Mahakal within him and surrender himself completely. We want to do a shortcut. Shortcut is short circuit. That doesn't work. So that's why Mother would sometimes say, have faith, seeing the person. Sometimes she will say, take the medicine. So when someone asks, tell me one thing, what I should do? Take the medicine or have faith? To someone else, she says, take the medicines and have faith in the grace. Both. So it all depends on this field that truth cannot apply. This crude idea of divine omniscience and omnipotence. We have to understand that yes, he is the Lord.
That doesn't mean he is arbitrarily going to do anything and everything. Otherwise, then this everything will be so nice. Hunky-dory, everybody sat together one day and said, prayed. Hallelujah. All good. So there is a way, you know. So that's what he says, that he is himself then nature. As the divine manifests in cosmic nature, he acts in close identity with nature. He is himself then nature, so to speak, but with a spirit within our workings, which foresees and forewills, understands and enforces, compels the action, overrules its result. So that's how he operates when he enters into nature. He doesn't just arbitrarily act. That, as the transcendent, he is the Lord. Here also he is the Lord, but he is running with nature, saying, oh, turn this way, oh, no, this will be better. You get those intuitive flashes, glimpses, and even if the result is something which could have been very worse, it overrules the results. That's how the divine action is in cosmic nature. As the one silent self of all, he is the non-doer. And nature alone is the doer. So this is the one aspect. And then few lines below. He by his immobility transmits the power of the Supreme Godhead through the compulsion of his pervading motionless presence and supports its workings by the equal regard of his witness self in all things. As the supreme supracosmic Godhead, he originates all, but is above all. He compels all to manifest, but does not lose himself in what he creates or attach himself to the works of his nature. So if you ask the transcendent God, he'll say, there is no cosmos, there is no creation, there is no you, just enter. Door shut, finished. But when you discover the divine within, now you see it's the same divine, but he's flowing with nature. You get a guidance. If you enter into contact with the cosmic divine, you can foresee the play. Understand what direction it is taking. And of course, you are always free because the transcendent God is free of all this. So it has a practical implication. So these are the possibilities before us. 317, last 7-8 lines. For we can identify ourselves with the one self-supporter of all things, and become the witness and non-doer, or else we can put our individual being into the human soul's right relation with the Supreme Godhead within us and make it in its parts of nature the immediate cause and instrument, nimitta, and its spiritual self and person a high participant in the supreme, free and unattached mastery of that inner noumen. This is a thing we have to see clearly in the Gita. So that's the basic difference. One is that, well, we can say silent, non-doer, immobile self, or we can put in relation with the self within. And then page 318 says, all are situated in me, not I in them, and yet all existence are not situated in me. Myself is the bearer of all existences, and it is not situated in existences. And then he says, manusim tanum ashritam. He's abode in the human body, and that the recognition of this truth is necessary for the soul's release by the integral way of works and love and knowledge, which is what is the theme of the second chapter. If there is only the transcendent, where is love, where is works? This is probably self-knowledge. But again, a limited self-knowledge, not the knowledge of the workings in the creation. But if there is God within, there is guidance, there is knowledge, there is works, there is adoration, all these things. And they are one Godhead. Yet in their functionality, they are different because they have to, according to the field of action. Now it comes to what take home point for us, the Jiva. Page 320, the supreme from above cosmic existence leans, it is here said, or presses down upon his nature, to lose from it in an eternal cyclic recurrence all that it contains in it. So it says, pressing upon my nature, prakartim swam. So that's how he, all that was once manifest and has become latent. All existences act in the universe in subjection to this impelling movement and to the laws of manifested being by which is expressed in cosmic harmonies the phenomenon of the divine all existence. The jiva follows the cycle of its becoming in the action of this divine nature. Prakartim, mamikam, Swam Prakartim, the own nature of the divine. So this is how the jiva has now entered the cycle. And then he has to follow. There is a manifestation with the laws of manifestation, the lines of forces, and he flows into it. Few lines below. Ignorant, it is subject to her cyclic whirl, not master of itself, but dominated by her. Avashah, Prakartir, Vasat. Only by return to the divine consciousness can it attain to mastery and freedom. So this is the first thing we have to understand. We are in the world. We don't know where it's going. It's like suddenly entering into a cricket field, not knowing what the game is about, not knowing about the ball, not knowing how to play. And imagine somebody also hands the bat in your hand. What's going to be your state? But we can play the same game consciously, knowing the rules of the game, knowing what the play is about. The divine too follows the cycle. This is beautiful. It's not just the jiva is there and he is up above. He also enters into the cycle. Not as subject to it, but as its informing spirit and guide, not with his whole being involved in it, but with his power of being accompanying and shaping it. He is the presiding control of his own action of nature, adhyaksha, not a spirit born in her, but the creative spirit who causes her to produce all that appears in the manifestation. So this is the basic thing that he also enters. And that's how we have the vibhuti and the avatar, which finally in the cycle he has entered. And in one odd life, he manifests himself, the full Godhead that has entered into the cycle. And finally, page 321. Those who ignore his presence, who despise because of its masks the divinity in the human form, are bewildered and befooled by the appearances of nature, and they cannot realize that there is the secret Godhead within, whether conscious in humanity as in the avatar or veiled by his maya. So this is the important take-home point for all of us, that God dwells within us, and in the avatar he becomes manifest. That's why the rule, follow the avatar, follow his leading, what he is saying. Our mind cannot conceive, it cannot understand. It must learn to be quiet and subjugate, understand that, well, there is someone out there and someone in here and someone all around who is conducting these affairs. And when he comes as an avatar, it becomes so easy. And again, see, to come as an avatar, as Shurvinda and the mother, nowhere in the entire history of spiritual literature, we have such a detailed guidance given ever to man. It's amazing, mind-boggling. And yet, the books lie in the showcases. That's a different story. That's those who are great-souled, who are not shut up in their idea of ego, who open themselves to the indwelling divinity, know that the secret spirit in man, which appears here bounded by the limited human nature, is the same ineffable splendor which we worship beyond as the Supreme Godhead. He is playing as bound and come with us in the prison. And the great soul understand it. So they don't want to run away because he is there. What is there? 10 lives, he will be there with us. What is there to be afraid of? So these are the great soul. They become aware of the highest status of him in which he is master and lord of all existences. And yet see that in each existence he is still the supreme deity and the indwelling Godhead. Though he has modified himself to the field of the play, yet it's the same Godhead. All the rest is a self-limitation for the manifesting of the variations of nature in the cosmos. They see too that as it is his nature which has become all that is in the universe, everything here is in its inner fact nothing but one divine. All is Vasudeva, and they worship him not only as the supreme Godhead beyond, but here in the world in his oneness and in every separate being. This was the original idea of Namaste. I bow down to the divine within you. Namah. I bow down to the divine within you. When Sri Aurobindo had to speak after the realization of the silent self, he had to give speeches. He gave speech in Pune, he gave speech in Mumbai and Surat and all this. He said, how am I going to speak?
is nothing. You just bow down to the Narayana in the audience and let the Narayana in you speak. So that means you're not trying to impress anybody, not trying to, you know, please the people, what they will like, they will not like, it's irrelevant. It is the divine who speaks and the divine who listens. That makes the difference. So this is where we get the secret. Often people say, I become very public conscious and social conscious. I tell them, see, whenever anybody you are speaking to, people are there, take it that they are all Divine Mother who are there in front of you. Will you be afraid of her? No, sir. Then what is the problem? You're not trying to impress her. She knows you. What is there to impress anyone? So this is where all is Vasudeva. They see this truth and in this truth they live and act. Him they adore, live, serve, both as the transcendent of things and as God in the world, and as the Godhead in all that is. Serve him with works of sacrifice, seek him out by knowledge, see nothing else but him everywhere, and lift their whole being to him, both in itself and in all its inward and outward nature. This they know to be the large and perfect way. For it is the way of the whole truth of the one supreme and universal and individual Godhead. Okay. Let's stop here. Okay. Chema.